Welcome, everyone. This is Jesse Fisher. Joyce Gunther's here with me.
Hello.
Let's see. Today's topic is a category of quotes. Again, we're in the process of reviewing the over 500 quotes I found from early Utah territorial years about building Zion. And the word Zion itself was actually mentioned, I think I counted them, somewhere over 4,000 times during conference talks and other talks given by apostles and prophets from the 1840s through the 1880s.
Wow, it must be important.
You think?
Yeah.
And they fell neatly into about 13 categories, these quotes that I found, and I keep finding them. That's one thing I realized I have to keep doing is when I first went through to find them, I missed a few here and there. And as I've been fleshing out each category, I notice that sometimes there's a decade in a subcategory that's missing. There's not a quote from that decade. So I'll search through my online database that I use, and sure enough, there I somehow skip that decade and find four or five more quotes and add them to my list. It's more and more as I do this, I'm realizing that's what they were all about. That's what the whole point of everything was during that time period.
Yeah.
They were building Zion. And anyway, today, the subcategory, it looks like it's the 5th, is that statements where they say that we're obligated as members of the church to build Zion. In fact, the first set of quotes, all of these quotes today, I've tried to pick out one from each decade, so you see that it was not just a fluke, not just a one-time deal, but that these champions for Zion, the early apostles and prophets, we're talking about it over a period of four decades. And so I'll do that. The first subcategory, overall there's 58 quotes in this category, and I divided them up into six subcategories. First subcategory is that building Zion is the work that we, as members of the church, have been given to do. In 1856, George Albert Smith said, "Incorrect traditions, though long followed, have to be surrendered, and we have to build up Zion." Was there any question in there?
No.
No.
Pretty straightforward.
Pretty clear. In the 1860s, Wilford Woodruff said, "We have to build up Zion, a temporal work here upon the face of the earth, and we have got to establish righteousness and truth." So he was pretty clear on that too. Brigham Young in the 1877, "We have no business here other than to build up and establish the Zion of God."
Wow.
I don't know if you see a pattern in this or not.
Yeah.
In 1881, so in the 1880s, John Taylor said, "We have to build up Zion and make it the praise of the whole earth." The next subcategory, do you feel like you have to build up Zion, Joyce?
I do. really? But that makes it even more urgent. You think about it, if they were saying this back then, how much more urgent must it be now?
Yeah. Well, and that was one thing last week when we talked about how building Zion is prophesied, by the Lord, that was kind of the attitude there too, is that the Lord's prophesied it, it has to happen.
Yes.
And we are the people to do it. I mean, there was no question. This is what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the reason we have to do it is answered by the next subcategory. And I titled that, it is our duty and responsibility to build up Zion. That's why we have to do it, is because it's our duty. And again, I have a quote from each decade. And there's a lot more. I'm just, you know, trying to spread it out and be fair to every decade here. 1850s, this is Brigham Young, 1857. There is no time allotted to us to use outside the limits of duty. But in doing our duty, in serving our God, in living our religion, in using every possible means to send forth the gospel of salvation to the inhabitants of the earth, to gather Israel and establish Zion, and build up the kingdom of heaven upon the earth, are incorporated all the blessings and all the comforts that man can desire. In other words, those are our duties, to do all of those things. And we talked about, 3 weeks ago, 3 or 4 weeks ago, that building Zion was part of the mission of the church at that time. And there were gobs of quotes that show that, you know, preaching the gospel, gathering the saints, and building Zion was central to the mission of the church. In fact, it was the mission of the church at that time. So that's the 1850s. 1860, oh, Brigham Young again. We have to build up Zion if we do our duty. That was 1863. I love these short ones because they're so to the point. It's like, boom. Sometimes these brethren get pretty wordy and you have to read through it twice. And, okay, now what did they say?
Mm-hmm. Well, read that first line again, something about there is no time outside of duty, something like
right.
that.
There is no time allotted to us to use outside the limits of duty.
So does that mean I have no leisure time? I can't go and read a novel or something?
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm wondering.
Maybe you should talk to God about that.
Yeah, probably better.
Let's see, we did 1860s. 1870s, Wilford Woodruff. Jesus Christ leans upon no other people. He expects from no people but those who have obeyed his gospel and gathered here the accomplishment of his great work, the building up of his latter-day Zion and kingdom. And, as I have said, this responsibility rests not only upon the prophets and apostles, but upon every man and woman who has entered into covenants with him. So it's the duty of everybody who's entered into covenants with God to build up Zion, according to Wilford Woodruff. And he might know.
He might.
Just an apostle. But anyway, John Taylor, 1883, oh my gosh, he was a prophet in 1883. We have gathered to these valleys of the mountains. What duties now devolve upon us? To build up the Zion of our God. These statements are all pretty clear.
Very.
Sometimes there's a quote that kind of says, you know, what subcategory I put it in, but the other ones make it so clear that that's definitely the case. So why is it our duty and responsibility to build up Zion? The next subcategory answers that, because building Zion is one of our callings from God. It's not a hobby, it's a calling.
Mm-hmm.
So in 1850s, Wilford Woodruff, this should be the uppermost in our minds. We should look for the building up of the kingdom and secure not only blessings for ourselves, but seek to become saviors of men on Mount Zion, and to try to do all the good we can, laboring to promote the cause and interest of Zion in every department thereof where we are called to act. See, now that one isn't 100% clear that it's a calling from God to build Zion, but it definitely fits in that category. But Wilford Woodruff, same person, 10 years later, 1867, makes it even more clear. We are called to build up Zion.
Yeah.
There he goes. He comes right out and says it. Mm-hmm. And we cannot build it up unless we are united. And in that union, we have got to carry out the commandments of God unto us. And we have got to obey those who are set to lead and guide us, guide the affairs of the kingdom of God. Comes right out and says it. We are called to build up Zion. And then in the next decade, oh look, it's another Wilford Woodruff. Now he isn't the only one that talked about this. George Buchanan, Erastus Snow, George Albert Smith, all talked about it as well. But his are the best quotes. So let's see, 1870s, this is Wilford Woodruff. Our calling is to perfect ourselves, to purify Zion, and to make it a fit habitation for the Son of God when he comes.
Well, there you go. That's the one of the ones that indicates strongly that we're supposed to be building it before he gets
before Jesus shows up.
That's right.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I should probably go put that in the other category, too. And then, oh, this one isn't Wilford Woodruff. Gosh, we broke our track record here. Erastus Snow, 1882. The calling and mission of the Latter-day Saints are to fulfill what is here promised in these scriptures, to bring about the restoration of scattered Israel, the establishment of Zion, the preparing of people for the coming of Christ. All right, so if we're called to build up Zion, the next subcategory kind of draws a conclusion from that. Not only are we called, but we are obligated to build Zion. Now, there weren't as many quotes where they come right out and say, in fact, there's only three, and I added another one in there because it sounded like we were obligated to build Zion. But the one from Brigham Young is probably the best one. I'll just read that one of the four. This is in 1863. Are we not all under obligation to be saints, to build up the kingdom of God, and to build up the Zion of our God upon the earth? Is not this obligatory upon every member of this church and kingdom, upon one as well as upon another in their calling and their capacity? That was a rhetorical question, of course. So, here's another one. Brigham Young, 4 years later, 1867. We are under obligations to establish the Zion of our God upon the earth. Period. Actually, it's a comma, but. All right, so why are we obligated to build Zion? Well, the next subcategory answers that. Partially, for part of us at least, we're obligated to build Zion because the priesthood obligates us to build Zion. And this starts to get into an area of quotes where I had no idea this was the case. It's been really fun reading all of these quotes because it's like, whoa, I didn't know that. Whoa, I didn't know that. over and over again. And here's one of the beginnings of the woes. W-H-O-A.
Yeah, I got it.
All right, so let's see, Heber Kimball, 1860. Every man that has received the priesthood, whether an apostle, prophet, high priest, elder, bishop, priest, teacher, or teacher, all should live as one man, be of one heart and one mind. Now, he doesn't mention Zion there, does he?
Mm-mm. But that's part of the definition of Zion.
Right, right. You can't be of one heart and one mind and not be Zion. So then Brigham Young, 7 years later in 1867, read the revelations in the Book of Doctrine and Covenants given through Joseph, and you will find that the burden of gathering the house of Israel, the building up of Zion, and the sanctifying of the people and the preparing for the coming of the Son of Man is upon the elders of this church. So the fact that he points out that it's the burden is on the elders, that it must be a priesthood obligation, is my conclusion there, my logic. But 10 years later, John Taylor says it even more plainly. God, in 1877, God expects these things at our hands, and they are things which we have a right to expect from one another. It is expected that we all do our duty, and God, the Father of Jesus, and all the eternal priesthood in the heavens expect the presidency, the 12, the presence of stakes, the high priests, the high councils, the 70s and the elders, the bishops, the priests, the teachers, and the deacons, and all the priesthood, and all the people to be governed by the law of God and to help faithfully to build Zion. He still doesn't come right out and say the priesthood obligates you to build Zion, but man, he comes close on that one. And then Wilford Woodruff, 1880, I feel therefore to say to my brethren who bear the holy priesthood, and I say it to myself and to all, I do not think we have much time to lie down and slumber. We have no time to speculate in trying to get rich and trying to accumulate gold and silver. What we have got to do is to build up the kingdom of God. As apostles, high priests, elders, 70s, and the lesser priesthood, we are bound together by this new and everlasting covenant, gospel and covenant. We are called to perform the great and mighty work of building up Zion. I keep saying that word. George Buchanan, 1883. Okay, this one's good, because he comes right out and says it clear as day. Joseph said in the beginning that it was the duty of the elders of this church to labor constantly to build up Zion, and not to build up that which is opposed to Zion. This embodies, in these few words, the policy that we should observe. So if we're not building up Zion, if we're building up that which is opposed to Zion, then what are we doing? We're building Babylon.
Yep.
So he's saying, Joseph said in the beginning, it's the duty of the elders to constantly labor to build up Zion and not Babylon.
We had an interesting little tidbit in Sunday school today.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking about Helaman.
Now, was this chapter in the true church?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah. Chapters 13 through 16 in Helaman. And it's about Samuel the Lamanite preaching to the wicked Nephites and how they didn't like it very much and how they had a tendency to be flattered. They wanted to be flattered. You know, they didn't want to hear that they were doing wrong things.
That they weren't awesome.
That they weren't
awesome. That they
didn't
deserve a participation trophy.
And that they tended to build up those who flattered them, you know, who were preaching flattering words to them, by giving them their gold, their silver, making sure they had nice clothes, that sort of thing. And Samuel the Lamanite calls them on that. Well, so our teacher said, so do we do that today? And so we had to kind of feel around for some ideas on that. And one of the things that we came up with was that we are going to websites maybe that are Babylonian in nature, and just by being there on those sites, that we are supporting them. You know, movies maybe. That sort of thing that reflect ideals that are less than Zion-like, less than celestial. And so any time that we're patronizing businesses or anything like that, that we maybe shouldn't.
Yeah, in fact, that was a big theme in the 1870s, if I remember right. that basically said, look, we're supposed to be building cities of Zion, not cities of Babylon.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's not just on the individual level, but as a people, we're supposed to be building Zion communities and not communities of, and they listed all these other different people, not Chinese communities, not Mohammedan communities,
mm-hmm.
not European communities. We're here to build Zion communities. And if we're not building Zion communities, then we're building Babylon.
Right.
So, the next subcategory, this leads into the next subcategory, which is the last one I have here. So, subcategory 5, the priesthood obligates us to build Zion, but not only that, and this was the one that blew my mind, is subcategory 6, there were several comments, especially from John Taylor, who said, the whole point of receiving the priesthood is to build Zion.
Wow.
And I went, whoa, mm-hmm. I had no idea. wow, I had no idea. So let me read some of these. They're John Taylor, or Wilford Woodruff was the first one I found. So 1873 was the first time I found one. And most of these in this category I ran across accidentally. But he said, we must build up the Zion and kingdom of God on the earth or fail in the object of our calling and receiving the priesthood of God in these latter days.
Mm-hmm.
So he's basically saying the object of receiving the priesthood is to build Zion.
Mm-hmm.
Or the goal. Is they would use the word object, we would use the word goal. John Taylor, then in 1877, which was about 4 years later, as mortal and immortal beings, as men holding the holy priesthood that the Lord has conferred upon us for the establishment of his kingdom, the building up of his Zion, it is of the utmost importance that we stand forth, every one of us, and magnify our several callings, for with all our weaknesses, with all our infirmities, God has given to us great treasures, which we hold in these earthen vessels. So he mentions that building up Zion as well as establishing the kingdom and the Holy Priesthood is given to us for those purposes. John Taylor, same month in 1877, different talk, John Taylor says, for as I have said, we are not here to build up ourselves, but to build up Zion and establish the principles of righteousness upon the earth. That is our calling. That is what the priesthood is conferred upon us for. And it behooves us to magnify it and honor our God. So it's a little clearer in that quote.
Mm-hmm.
Then he comes right out and says it 4 years later, 1881, John Taylor, what is this priesthood given us for? Okay, you guessed, Joyce. What is the priest going to say? What is he going to say?
It's building up Zion.
Right. He says, that we may be enabled to build up the Zion of our God. Yeah.
Well, you know, lately we've been hearing from the brethren that we are not living up to our privileges. And I think that is part of it, don't you?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. So the very next year, John Taylor says, this is 1882, it shows that while God has revealed the priesthood to us upon the earth and conferred upon us those privileges, that in former generations he revealed the same priesthood to other men, and that those men holding that priesthood ministered to others here upon the earth, and that we are operating with them and they with us in our interests and in the interests of the church and kingdom of God in assisting to build up the Zion of our God. So he's not saying not only is it the point of us receiving the priesthood, but it was the point of former generations of receiving the priesthood, and we're currently working with them to build Zion.
So how do we work with them?
Well, that may be happening on the general level, general church level. I don't know. I haven't, you know, so far, nobody from the city of Enoch has come and talked to me about building science.
Right, right.
I wouldn't mind, you know, if there was some place I could put up an ad. Hey, I would do it, you know. They've got to be a lot further along than we are, technology-wise, because they haven't been distracted by wars and materialism and all sorts of stuff that distracts us from building Zion. They got to be way ahead of us. So, yeah, it would be awesome to have their cooperation, or at least us cooperate with them.
Right.
So then in 1883, this is the last quote for tonight. This is John Taylor again, 1883. This is the position that we as priests of the Most High God ought to occupy. We should feel that we are not living for ourselves, but that we are living for God, living to accomplish His purposes. We are here to build up a Zion unto the Lord of hosts, a Zion which signifies the pure in heart, a people who will be prepared for the great events that are about to transpire upon this earth, and who will be able to stand the convulsions that will overthrow the world. And He has given us the priesthood for that very purpose. It's hard to come to any other conclusion after reading these quotes, but it's pretty remarkable. I've been amazed, and all of this was motivated by me being asked to be the high priest's secretary in my ward, and we had a very intimidating group there, and I knew that I had to. I had to be able to back up anything I wanted to teach about Zion with authoritative quotes. And so that's what motivated me to go on this hunt. And after finding all these 500-plus quotes and counting, I've just been amazed at the stuff I've learned. And this is definitely one of those that not only are we called to build Zion, but it's our duty and responsibility. We're obligated to do it. And that's why we've been given the priesthood. So.
Well, that's awesome in the original meaning of the word.
Yeah.
Well, we don't have any questions yet on the Zion Society page.
Here, let me I guess it was just so clear that nobody had a question to ask, huh?
I guess so.
Cool. Next week, assuming I'm alive, I plan to be.
Well, good.
There's 106 quotes, which is what roughly twice what we had this week, that make it blatantly obvious that the brethren were actively engaged in building Zion here in Utah in the 1850s, 60s, and 70s, and 80s. And that in itself is pretty remarkable, I think, that idea.
Mm-hmm.
I never, you know, in the church film, let's see, which one was it that they show it in the Joseph Smith Memorial Building in Salt Lake? They had a film where they were interviewing the sister who was part of the Trek West. And I don't know if she was a fictional character, but she talked about how she joined the church because she was excited about the idea of building Zion, and that, you know, they attempted to do it in Nauvoo and Jackson County, but they were driven out, and so they came to Utah. And, you know, she's looking back over her life. I think the film is essentially kind of a reminiscent from her perspective or something. And it ends with her, you know, rocking in her rocking chair as an old woman, saying, you know, we came here to build Zion, and I was really glad to participate, blah, blah, blah. Well, that's probably the only time I've ever heard that they were actively seeking to do it. And as you can see, it wasn't just that, hey, let's do something fun, let's build Zion. They, you know, from today's quotes, you see that it was, you know, they felt obligated to do it. It wasn't just something to do for fun.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But, and I think that came out in last week's, where we talked about the prophecies about Zion to be fulfilled in our days. And,
listen, yeah. Eric Jensen just posted a question, and I misunderstood, and so I think I've got it now, Eric. It says, thoughts on the Council of the 50, their minutes of their meetings, the minutes mm-hmm. for their meetings being released, and the timing in relation to building Zion. Do you have any
heard
thoughts
those,
on that?
Well, I hadn't heard that they had been released, so I see his post here.
Yeah, Council of 50 minutes featured in New Joseph
Smith papers.
Right, Joseph Smith papers.
Here, let me read this. A new volume of never-before-published. So this is MormonNewsroom.org. If
mm-hmm.
somebody wants to go there and search for this, Council of 50 Minutes featured in New Joseph Smith Papers volume. Oh, I see. So they're releasing different volumes over a period of time, I guess.
Right.
So I don't see the word Zion on there, but a new volume of never-before-published documents offers a candid view on how the early Mormon leaders handled the temporal affairs of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And in 1, 2, 3, 4 weeks or so, we'll read all these quotes about how Zion, building Zion, is a temporal effort. And
mm-hmm.
We would use the word economic. They didn't use the word economic. They used the word temporal. So, yeah, that'll be interesting to read those. So the Joseph Smith papers feature the minutes from the Council of 50 meetings held in Nauvoo in the 1840s. Oh, is that all? 1840s. They also met in Utah in the 1850s and 60s and 70s. And it was the Council of 50. I don't know what you know about the Council of 50, Joyce,
go ahead.
Well, it was the political kingdom of God. So
mm-hmm.
it was the political organization. The Council of 50 was, you know, if the church was on its own planet, the Council of 50 would be the government.
Right. Let me read the last couple paragraphs on that page that you started reading from.
Okay.
It says, the council was also involved in a variety of matters in Nauvoo, including the building of the Nauvoo Temple and in governing the city after the Illinois government took the city charter away from the Latter-day Saints. Joseph Smith formed the council in March 1844, a few months prior to his death, to handle the temporal and political matters of the church. It was initially made up of 23 members, but was expanded to roughly 50 members, mostly prominent church members.
And there were some non-members involved.
It says three men who were not members of the church were also included.
Yeah. And that organization continued into Utah. In fact, I can't remember where I read this, so it's rumor until you substantiate it for yourself. But in fact, they were the organization that moved the Saints west.
I see.
And they continued to function occasionally in Utah. And it was part of the reason why the U.S. had such a problem with making Utah a state was because we had our own government. We had our own economy, our own economic system, which wasn't competitive free enterprise. And so in the 1880s, when the U.S. government conquered the church, they, you know, from that point on, the Council of 50 was never reconstituted or used at all.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose if the U.S. government falls apart at some point in time, the church will probably reestablish that. I don't know, but I assume so.
Well, thanks, Eric, for cluing us in on this. That's awesome.
Yeah. Okay, so I guess I probably should add for anybody who's listening to this tape or this recording after the fact, I probably ought to add my disclaimer. In fact, I should probably mention this every time. Don't assume that because I'm saying Building Zion was such a crucial and central and important role in the early church that somehow the church today is less than. I'm not saying that at all. I believe that if the members of the church themselves were more interested in building Zion than building Babylon, which we do every day, that the church would quickly step in and say, okay, since you're interested in that, let's do it. But since we're all very much preoccupied with the delicacies of Babylon, that there's really no point in them having a Building Zion program other than, you know, perfect the saints, try to get us to be even ready to start Building Zion as a people.
So what do you think it's going to take, Jesse?
Honestly? I think the Lord is going to take us out as a nation and force us to unite as a people.
Well, force, not in taking away agency, but in giving us circumstances where we can't fail
to
face the music, maybe?
Right, yeah. When the Saints first came to Utah, the very first thing they did when they pulled into the valley was organize in their temporal affairs. The very first thing they did was set up committees. We had a hunting committee, a fishing committee, a building homes committee. I don't remember all the committees, but there were like 10 of them. And they divided up the work and went to it. Everybody was working as one big family to fulfill their economic needs. To answer your question, I think what it's going to take is the Lord is going to have to whack us so hard that we have to do that again
mm-hmm.
in order to survive.
Mm-hmm. So maybe
that's my guess.
Well, you know, earthquakes and floods and stuff, they level the playing field, you know, church members, not just church members, but Red Cross, other people come in and help out, and then but that tends to soften hearts, humble people, and so they're more willing to listen to and accept the gospel and make some changes in their lives, and not just joining our church, but having a better relationship with God. Because when you're in a desperate situation, even if you have professed to be atheistic, boy, don't you reach for help, any help whatsoever.
Yeah, there are
when,
no atheists
when it's bad,
in foxholes.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so it takes a terrible blow for some people to humble themselves and reach for God.
Yeah. I guess the reason, you know, you and I have talked about this before, the reason I, in spite of the fact that I think it's going to take a hard whack against the head by God to wake us up to the need to do this, I'm hoping that by sharing these ideas with my fellow saints, that maybe it'll spark in the hearts of some people, or flame the spark that's in some hearts of some of my fellow saints to move in the direction of a willingness to build Zion, an awareness that we're actually currently full bore building Babylon, and that we need to stop and say, okay, we don't want to do that anymore. How can we move towards building Zion? And so, yeah, even though it's going to take a big kick in the pants from God to get us to do this, I think in the meantime we can try to encourage our fellow man to start considering these things and realize this building Zion was central to the gospel. It's God's will that we do it. We're obligated by it. It was prophesied. It has to be done before Jesus will return.
Mm-hmm.
It's really kind of silly to pray, you know, that Christ will return when we're not doing what it takes to bring him. If we build it, he will come.
I'm hoping that in one of these future, in several of these future recordings, that we address those specific things that we can do. It's important to see that overarching concept, mm-hmm. and all, but what can I, Joyce Gunther, do to bring Zion?
Yeah. Well, the Sunday school answer would be, you know, you can build Zion in your heart. And I have quotes that say, now, that's good, but that's not all you need.
Right. So in the future, I know we have to wrap up here pretty soon, but I'd really like to talk about some of those nitty-gritties of building Zion, too.
The how-tos.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was just complaining today. I'm now in the Sunday school presidency, and we're doing the monthly ward teacher councils. And I was just explaining today how the older I get, and I'm so old.
Watch it. I'm always going to be older than you are.
The older I get, the more interested I am in practical things. How do we do this? You know, all my 37 years in the church, I've been told, you should do this, you should be more like Christ, you should be forgiving, you know, you should do this and that. And I know I should. I want to know how. Let's
mm-hmm.
get some to-do lists here. And I guess that's what you're saying is,
yes,
let's
I want
get
to
down
do
to
it.
The nitty-gritty. How do we actually do this? How do we actually build Zion?
Right. So perhaps even on these calls we can devote maybe about half the time to the overarching concept and what
mm-hmm.
the brethren have said. And then
mm-hmm.
maybe the last half we could talk about the nitty-gritties. And because I was just telling Jess this today, listeners, that I'm more of a nitty-gritty kind of person, and Jesse is more of the overarching kind of person. And so, you know, if it were just I talking to you, then that's probably all we'd talk about are the nitty-gritties. And so I think we should have a balance. You know,
yeah, I'm not opposed to that at all. In fact,
okay.
that's the reason I'm doing all of this overarching is that is that I had to justify my statements about Zion in my priesthood lessons, and so I found this huge treasure trove of quotes and, you know, divided them up into categories, and so now I'm sharing them. But yeah, definitely. In fact, on my website, buildingzion.org, I have a page. Let me go there now so I can see what I called it. Best practices.
Mm-hmm.
This was my best guess, okay? In fact, I started out, well, actually I explain. I added a quote by Brigham Young that I had found where he says, you know, let's organize a community. I love this quote. In fact, let me read it. So, in October of 1872, President Brigham Young expressed the idea that captured my imagination has led me to ask the question, why not? Here's Brigham's quote. We want to see a community organized in which every person will be industrious, faithful, and prudent. But if such a community could be organized to show the Latter-day Saints how to build up the kingdom of heaven on earth, I would be glad to see it. Would not you? If this could be done, I want to say to the Latter-day Saints that I have a splendid place large enough for about 500 or 1,000 persons to settle upon, and I would like to be the one to make a donation of it, with a good deal more to start the business, to see if we can actually accomplish the affair and show the Latter-day Saints how to build up Zion. So
wow.
Brigham's
see,
ideal.
That's where I want to go.
Right. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So this page on the website, buildingzion.org, I call it best practices, and the very next statement. So if you were to ask me, okay, Jesse, given all you've read and pondered about building Zion, if you could build a pre-Zion community right now, how would you go about it? And then I give this my best guess steps below that. And the first step was to establish a Zion's Board of Trade. And most, I've never met a Latter-day Saint who I hadn't talked to first about it who knew what Zion's Board of Trade was. Nobody's ever heard of it. Unless you've read Great Basin Kingdom by Leonard J. Arrington, you wouldn't have heard about it.
And I tried to find that book, but it is nowhere to be had, apparently.
I've got a copy you can borrow.
Mm-hmm. If I sign in blood.
Right. Well, yeah. It's, I think you can, I think I saw one for $120.
Mm-hmm.
No, I got mine for about 40, I think.
Wow.
Anyway, so Zion Board of Trade, that's where I would start. In fact, I pitched this to my state president. In fact, I have a written proposal that you could take to your state president if you wanted to.
Okay.
The challenge that we have is we saints aren't used to thinking in terms of economics in regards to Zion. So my state president, and I have to give him great big kudos for this, he came right out and said, the Lord wants us to build Zion as a stake. Well, when you read the stake mission statement that he wrote out, the stake vision statement, the three different pillars that he mentions in the statement are all spiritual. You know, the first one is we've got to learn to receive revelation. You can't build Zion without revelation, it says. And encourages us to read our scriptures every day so that the Lord can inspire us and stuff like that. And all of that is very important. I'm basing my approach on the fact that, okay, anyone who's really interested in doing Brigham's experiment that we just read that quote about,
mm-hmm.
wanting to build a Zion community, anybody who's really interested in doing that will, I hope and assume, will have already have the law of God written in his heart.
Right.
So anyway, Well, this is a side note. He and I both have been amazed at the kicking and screaming among the high priests in our stake against the idea of establishing Zion.
Wow.
I'm just flabbergasted by that. But anyway, so that was my first step, is to establish a Zion Board of Trade. And basically what John Taylor did, because Brigham Young's United Orders, most of them, 80% of them, failed within 2 years. John Taylor's approach was, okay, instead of putting the bishops and stake presidents in charge of the co-ops and the United Orders, let's put our experienced and talented business people in charge of it. And so the Zion's Board of Trade was kind of the board of directors for the co-op building organization of the church. So every stake had a Zion Board of Trade, and then there was a general board of trade. And what their goal, and this is what I pitched to my stake president back at the time when we had so much unemployment, was to get these men together, assess what temporal resources are available in our stake, what underutilized resources, including underemployed and unemployed people, and figure out a way to put together a cooperative where these people are given jobs, you know, given work, and then the community has benefited from it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what a board of trade was. And you can read about it on Wikipedia.
There's not much there. I just did.
Well, sorry, I wrote that.
okay.
Yeah, I went down to the BYU library and checked out, you know, the Zion Board of Trade constitution, and found everything they had on it, and read in Leonard J. Aronson's Great Basin Kingdom about it. I believe that's where I first found out about it. And so, yeah, that's pretty much all I could find is on Wikipedia. But anyway, that's what I would. That would be my first step, is get together a group of people who know how to organize businesses so that they can organize cooperatives to fill economic needs among the saints. That's big picture again. But and then in step two on my best practices page there on buildingzion.org, I have, as a board, we'd prayerfully follow Lorenzo Snow's example. Well, what did he do? Well, in Brigham City in the late 1860s and 1870s, he got Brigham City to be, they estimated, 85% self-sufficient, where they produced all their own goods and services within their community. And because they had done that when there was a huge worldwide economic recession, Brigham City was just fine. In fact, they had their best year ever while the rest of the world was hurting.
Okay, I just got sparklies in my eyes. That's where I want to be.
You hit your head?
You know? No, I mean, seriously, we are on the brink of economic disaster in this country. And even just losing power for a few days would just throw us seriously out of whack.
And that's why I think we should be preparing these things now before that happens.
Mm-hmm.
We almost have a, well, we'll fix it when the problem hits. And I'm thinking, good luck with that.
That's a lot harder, actually, to do it that way.
Yeah, extremely. You can't get parts. if the American economic system were to collapse, you wouldn't be able to get parts to fix your anything.
Mm-hmm.
All these elements need to be in place. Even if we're doing them as a hobby on the side. In fact, that would be one approach to doing this, is have everyone who's interested have a productive activity, an economically productive activity on the side, like, you know, raising eggs or growing food or, you know, making leather products, some pre-electric technology that provides food, clothing, shelter, and maybe even energy. We ought to be doing those things on the side as hobbies so that when, if and when the American economic system collapses, we just go full time in those hobbies, which are now our economy. Mm-hmm. It just makes so much sense to me to have that in place ahead of time rather than to flounder. I mean, well, anyway, that's my opinion. So Lorenzo Snows, he started out by launching a cooperative to sell products produced by their members. And so we could do something like that, a marketing cooperative. We could even be online. You know, a friend of mine has a friend here close that builds leather products, I think, if I remember right. You know, if I could find people who were interested in doing this kind of thing, we'd create a marketing co-op website to sell these products produced by our members. And then those profits, and this is what John or Lorenzo Snow did, he used the profits from the co-op to set up other people in business making other products that were needed locally that were then sold in the co-op. So the profits of the organization were used to set other people up to produce more products that were needed locally.
Well, that's kind of like the church perpetual education fund.
Yeah, but it's the same principle but applied to economics. Yes.
Right.
Absolutely. And maybe they'll do that soon. I don't know. But
that's exciting.
Yeah, and so just following that process alone enabled Brigham City to become nearly completely self-sufficient.
Amazing.
Yeah. So that, and then there's some other stuff on that page about how you could physically go about creating moving from a virtual community to a real live brick and mortar community, you know, which would be a challenge. This kind of thing overwhelms a lot of people. How could you possibly build a community? Well, you build it one brick at a time and start with, you know, you just take baby steps. And, you know, I've got here, and again, this is my best guess as to how it could be done. It could be done in other ways, but this is knowing, you know, knowing what I know and what I've studied, here's how I would do it. So you use the co-op funds from our virtual co-op to buy the land. Then you could build various forms of water sources. You got to have water to have a community.
Right.
You know, wells, solar water stills, rain catchments, those kind of things. And then plant a large forest garden that would eventually provide most of the community food. You know, lots of fruit and nut trees, lots of bushes that produce food, plants, vines, canopy trees, so that the community can be self-sufficient as far as food goes. And then building the, you know, again, you're using co-op profits to build the community's first, maybe even multi-family, off-grid home. And it's off-grid so that it can be independent. Babylon is so dependent.
Well, sure. And even we've been getting so many solar energy salesmen, and all it is that they are encouraging you, and the government gives you these boosts,
incentives.
You know, incentives. Yeah. And but it's still locked into the grid.
Yeah. 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 And so then the next step I have on here, build a central warehouse for the co-op store. So the central warehouse receives products from the manufacturers, repackages them if needed, and ships them out to to whoever's buying them. Then start building facilities for the various manufacturing units of the co-op. So you're just growing this thing one step at a time, transitioning it from spread out among all the different people who are participating and wherever they live, and then bringing it into a central location.
Mm-hmm.
I know building communities sounds really bizarre probably to most members of the church, but there are hundreds of, they're called intentional communities around the world. People are doing it all over the place for all sorts of different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Very few of them are actually religious oriented. Most of them are economic, you know, oriented. Most of them aren't, you know, they're all still pretty much tied into the system. The Babylonian system, we might call
right.
it. I think as Latter-day Saints, knowing what we know, we could do it a lot better. I watch videos on YouTube. Different people take these tours of these various intentional communities, and I just, you know, I see what they're doing, and I'm going, man, if I could only find 100 Latter-day Saints who want to build Zion, what could we do? You know, compared to these Gentiles who don't have the fullness of the gospel. They don't know where it's supposed to go.
Mm-hmm.
And what awesomeness we could accomplish under the same circumstances.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Good
and
stuff.
Speaking of independence, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 weeks from now, roughly, one of the subcategories of quotes that I found is that building Zion includes achieving economic independence from Babylon. The brethren come right out and say, the reason that, A, we need to be independent, we need to manufacture all our own consumer goods, we need to become self-sustaining. Why? So we can stand when Babylon falls.
There
and
you go.
They come right out and say it. This is why we need to be independent. Anyway, so we'll get to that. Any last thoughts? We've used up all our hour here.
We really have.
I really like your idea of talking specifics after we talk generalities. I appreciate that.
Well, it's what I'm more interested in personally,
sure.
But
yeah.
it's not the whole ball of wax, and I think we should touch on all different levels.
Sure.
Different people are going to have different levels of interest and different specific, well, back to your statement about hobbies, you know, we need to develop our hobbies towards that end, you know, somebody was talking about generating energy, you know, with a bicycle type thing where you can pedal for a few minutes and then you have lights all night long, kind of a thing. Those kinds of things I'm interested in too. And we all have different things that we want to focus on that we can contribute. I think it's a good exercise, and I will be quiet after this. we need to wrap it
well,
up.
We're done. You have to be quiet when we hang out.
Yeah, we're done. no, I think it's a good exercise. I've done this a couple of times because I'm evolving, and I think everybody else is too.
Sure.
Is to make a list of things that you think you can contribute to a Zion society, you know, practical things that you can do for this community. And that's been an eye-opener for me.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Cool.
Okay.
Let's do it.
Fun.
Go team.
Go team.
All
Go
right.
Team Zion.
Well, I guess this is goodbye.
Okay.
Next year in Zion, right?
All right. Till next week.
Thanks, Joyce.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.